All right, in the house, I have Mr. Lights Out. It's none other than Sean Merriman. Sean, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing well, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for taking the time. Man, I got to watch you firsthand growing up. I grew up a Patriots fan, but man, those Chargers games were always something special. So it's really a lot of fun to be able to pick your brain about how you managed to put together an incredible career.
Well, you know, it was fun, man. I tell anybody when they ask like about my time in NFL, like it's kind of a dream, man. You go and you grow up looking at watching your favorite player, watching your favorite team, and then you go back and you say, "Oh, damn, I'm wearing the same helmet, or I'm playing against that same team who I used to watch growing up." And some of these guys who played in NFL long enough, you actually get a chance to play against when they're on their way out. So you're like, man, I'll never forget. I was playing against Willie Rolfe. I used to watch Willie Rolfe, left tackle for Kansas City back when I think he was with the Saints growing up. And there you go. That's when I see these guys, man, and growing up, I'm like, man, I'm going to play against Willie Rolfe one day. And I got a chance to play against Willie Rolfe. So it was cool for me.
So I was going to get to it at some point, but was there like the one, two, or three toughest offensive linemen guys that you knew you had your work cut out when you were going to play against them?
It was the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that Walter Jones was the best left tackle I've ever played against. I played against Orlando Pace. I played against a lot of them, but that Kansas City Chiefs team they had like between 2004 and 2007 or 8, where they had Willie Rolfe, Brian Waters, Will Shields. They had Priest Holmes at running back, and they had Tony Richardson at fullback, and they would just run the football 30, 40 plus times a game and just pound you. And you walk out of that game and you're like, man, my shoulders hurt, my ribs hurt, my back hurt. And it was, you know, a rivalry for us while we played them twice a year. So we had to see those guys a lot. So I'll never forget those days. I cherish those moments, not my shoulders, but me personally, I cherish those moments.
So do you feel physically good today? Because you're a guy that absolutely battled through injuries for it seemingly like every year, man.
Yeah, after my third or fourth year, I mean, I couldn't stay healthy. I spent 2 years just in and out of the game because I would come back probably too fast, trying to rush and getting myself back on the field because mentally I just couldn't accept the fact that I was hurt and hurt myself even more. I finally got healthy in my last couple of years, but when you have those injuries, you're never really the same again, whether it's a knee or Achilles or something like that. You just never really come back to the player you once was. Now, man, it's weird because I understand I'm older, so I understand my body more. You know, I'm eating different. You're sleeping different. You know how to take care of yourself a lot more. I do a hot yoga, right, a couple of days a week. I do circuit training, and I do a lot of course, because I'm in an MMA, field. I do a lot of MMA training at least three times a week. And so I mix it up like that where it's not so much pounding on my body anymore. And ultimately, I feel a lot better.
Yeah, and I saw at one point you talked about the MMA training, emphasizing do the training, don't necessarily spar, don't take those hits, but use that to get in shape, stay in shape.
Absolutely. I tell anybody, and it's one of the reasons why I love not only just MMA, but I love Lights Out so much because it keeps me around, right? It keeps me around the competitive side. And when you get done playing, you have this void that you can't compete anymore. You're not running out to 70, 80,000 people anymore. You're not playing in front of millions anymore. So where does that competitive edge go? And so for me, I get a chance to go and spar and move around and get some mitt work and go and do sometimes even classes, MMA classes with other people. I picked up over the pandemic, started doing jujitsu a little bit more, rolling on the ground more, and all these different kinds of disciplines. And I tell, especially former athletes, and I would say even bigger than that, I would say anybody who's leaving one thing and going to the next and you're looking for that extra drive, pick up a discipline, right? Go box. Go do some Muay Thai. Go do jujitsu. Go do MMA. Whatever it is, pick up a form of combat sports because I think the discipline of it really keeps you balanced.
And I definitely want to get more into that, but to even sort of lay the foundation here, you know, this warrior mentality, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, the same thing that allows you to play through pain in your career, you know, do you think that in hindsight you wish you had done things a little different because you just kept pushing and pushing and, you know, whether it's the Achilles, you know, it's the knee, it's this, it's that. But on the other end of it, you know, to get through being a professional athlete and where you are today, that same mindset has to pay dividends now as you try to build your brand. And I mean, you know, it's the apparel brand, it's Lights Out, XF. I mean, just what are your thoughts overall about the price that really, you know, the toll that you have to pay?
It is. I call it my gift and curse. And I'll say that for across the board for anybody, right? It's a gift and a curse to have this warrior-like mentality, to want to push through anything, because you... there's a fine line of being tough, and there's a fine line of not just being smart about it, right? And I was like pushing on the lines of not being smart about it and getting back into the game or rushing myself back in, not completely healthy. And you got to start listening to your body. And the crazy thing is, a lot of that doesn't happen until you start to get older, right? So they say when you get older, you get wiser. You know, the gray hairs, I got a couple grays now popping out the side here and there. So, but that all comes with knowing and understanding your body just that much more. And that goes for a lot of things, man. Not just what, you know, you got to learn how to, if you're having a tough day, if you're dealing with a lot, you got to learn how to back off, right? You're not tough by saying, hey man, I'm having a rough day. I need to take a chill pill, right? I need to relax a little bit. I need to get myself balanced. I get myself, going again and in good spirits, because if you don't, man, you're not listening to your body and what your body ultimately is telling you.
For sure. Now I want to talk about more of the Lights Out stuff that you have going on, but first, can we talk about the most savage story of you getting a nickname? Because in high school, you knock out 4 kids in a game. So that's how the nickname Lights Out comes to be. How does the celebration come from there though? And then I want to talk about really, how do you take a high school nickname in fast forward? Like, what is it, 20 years later, and here you are, and it represents so much. Like, how do you not just carry that, but literally like compound growth on that every single year?
That's a really couple of good questions, man. The first part of it is my sophomore year in high school at Frederick Douglass High School in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. I did knock out 4 kids in one game. I had about 20 to 25 students coming up, running up to me after the game saying, oh, you knocked those kids' lights out. And so that's where the name kind of stuck at. So anyway, I went to go beg my mom to get me a Lights Out tattoo of my right forearm. And 2 weeks, she said, boy, you're crazy. I'll never do it. No way in hell. And then I finally, she caved in, and I got a Lights Out tattoo on my right forearm with a light switch in a hand doing that. And so my first big hit at the University of Maryland my freshman year against Georgia Tech, ESPN, prime time. I get in the game as a freshman. I got to show out. I got a big hit a wide receiver going across the middle. And I kind of did this like I was pretending to turn the light switch out, and the crowd got crazy loud. And then I got energy and I started jumping up and down and doing it. So that's how the name and brand kind of began then and stuck. And over time, what I realized, understood that Lights Out was much bigger than me. I only kind of sparked a fuse or lit the fire, however you want to call it, to make it on a national stage and platform, right? I gave it some life. I gave it life. But I always knew that Lights Out was bigger than me. Lights Out is a team. Lights Out is a way of life. Lights Out is MMA league. Lights Out is a brand that, you know, is going to live far longer than I ever can. And I realized that. So I started branding it as such. You know, it wasn't about me making big hits and big plays anymore. It was, who else can I get on Team Lights Out to show that they're a Lights Out athlete? How can I promote the clothing line so you can feel good about wearing Lights Out when you go work out? And so when I changed that mindset into it not being about me anymore, because I realized that my time in the sport of football was short-lived. And then one day, you know, the younger generation especially probably going to remember me from the MMA league or all the Lights Out stuff that I'm doing more so than they will remember what I did on the football field. So that was my mentality. That was something I figured out, I would say, in the mid 2000s when I was, you know, my early 20s. And I secured the name and rights from a big company. I bought the name Lights Out from a big company, and I kind of started to build from there.
Yeah, and thankfully, because of YouTube, some of those highlights will live forever. So some of those younger kids that didn't watch it, they'll know what happened before the mixed martial arts. But from my understanding, you grew up a boxing fan. So how did the evolution of MMA come into maybe an interest, but then how did you, like, did you really, I think Jake Glazer maybe was the guy who sort of got you a little bit more into MMA. Did you actually use this technique while training as an NFL athlete, and why this specifically kind of feels like a love that sort of blossomed over time. Why did this become where you wanted to put your namesake and, you know, compete against the UFC?
Yeah, well, you know, for us, well, for me starting out, we grew up fighting. I mean, I grew up in Prince George's County in Washington, D.C. in the 80s and 90s, late 80s and 90s. And fighting was just part of the culture. You had to fight to, you know, bullies. You had to fight to, you know, prove yourself in a neighborhood. You had to fight to protect yourself. So that was kind of a fighter's mentality that I've always had. I've always taken on. And we also had a lot of big fighters, boxers coming from the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area growing up. And fighting was always in my family. I had a couple of professional boxers, uncles of mine that were fighters themselves. So I was around fighting for a very long time before MMA came around. Now, I got drafted by the Chargers in 2005. I met Jay Glazer around that time, over at Fox Sports. And he said, hey, I think that you should try this thing out called MMA. I said, okay, what is it? You know, what do I do? Well, he said it will help you out with your hand-eye coordination, opening your hips, getting more nimble so you can kind of bend and turn a corner around those big offensive tackles and get low and bend your knees and stuff like that. I said, cool, if it's going to make me better, I'll try it out. So he invited me to the gym one day. I walked in, and the first person I see is Randy Couture. And so Randy Couture is there. It's Randy Couture's gym. I think at the time it was on La Brea in Hollywood. And I'm looking at Randy Couture, and obviously I know who he is because at this time, he's one of the most elite fighters of all time. And so I looked at Jay, and I'll never forget what I said to him. I said, hopefully you don't think I'm going to fight Randy Couture today, because that's just not happening. But anyway, I got in there, and I started to pummel and move around and throw punches and kind of grapple and just do little stuff to kind of slowly pick it up. But I felt my football game, my NFL, when I got in the league next year, my body and the way I approached it and my hands and the way my endurance and stamina, everything was changed about my game. And I credit, the sport of MMA for that, because you can only do but so much in a football workout, right? You go and pound weights, you do your cone drills, you do your ladder drills, you do your pass rush drills or whatever position specific thing you got to work on, but then that's it. So now you can really start to fine tune your game and start doing certain things. And that's what I did. That's what MMA did for me. It was, okay, I already got speed, explosion, power. I can run fast. I can jump high, but how can I just open my hips up a little bit more so I can turn around that big tackle? And that's when my game went to another level.
So ultimately then, because, you know, physically, right, the NFL, it's so competitive. The differences between guys is so minimal. It is the key factor, in your opinion, to be an elite pass rusher, hip flexibility? Is it the ability to, like, that hand-eye coordination to maybe get a little better at hand fighting in the trenches?
Yeah, it's all hand combat, right? And so when I came out, I only played, I only knew how to rush the passer for 3 years before I got to the NFL, right? I never played outside linebacker in high school. I never rushed the passer. I kept getting taller, and my coaches in college put me at outside linebacker, defensive end, and said, hey, this is what you're going to do. So I didn't have much experience pass rushing. That wasn't my natural position. So I had to learn and work how to use my hands. So every day after practice, I will grab those dummy pads and I will work the hand drills. I will work them and work them and work them until I couldn't anymore, until I finally got better at the position. And so MMA helped me, with my balance and leveraging. You're going against tackles that are probably, in some cases, close to 100 pounds more than you are. I mean, or a little less. And so, you know, these guys are also athletic. They're not just like big slobs who are just out there. These guys are physical specimens and they're athletic. So I wanted to just fine tune my game as much as possible. And that's why I ended up picking up the sport.
Gotcha. So I just want to get a little more into the NFL days. Being a Charger with just the landscape at the time, Peyton, Brady, what was the number one game that you had circled on your calendar?
To be honest, I had, all the big quarterbacks, right? I remember LeVar Arrington, right, who played for the Washington, at the time of Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team now. At the time, he told me, he said, hey, if you want to be, college, going into college. He said, if you want to be known as a great, you got to have a great game against the greats. And for some reason, that stuck with me. And I don't know, you ever see like, you say something to like a baby or kid or whatever, and they just regurgitate it. They always say it and they always think it, they never forget it. Remember when you said long time ago, they always bring it up. For whatever reason, that stuck with me like no other. And I started to always think, I said, okay, I got Tom Brady, I got Peyton Manning, I got, Steve McNair, I got, so I started with Ben Roethlisberger. So I knew in order to get myself on the platform, anybody saying that I was great or an exceptional player, I knew that I had to have great games against them. So if you ever go back and look at the stats against Tom Brady that I had again in 2007 AFC Championship game, I sacked him a couple times, forced fumble. Look at Peyton Manning. I think my rookie year, I got him 3 or 4 times. Look at, look at all, what I've done in the past against these greats, because that, to me as a kid, that stuck with me, that I had to have these great games against some of the great quarterbacks, and that never left me.
So, just transitioning a little bit then from you as an athlete to thinking about now you as an entrepreneur in having your own team or in being part of teams with everything that you have your hands on, whether it was, North Turner, Marty Schottenheimer, or, looking at maybe what the Patriots did or what the Colts had done, in your estimation, what is it about the best teams? What did they have? What were they doing that made them great? Is there anything from those NFL days you've been able to take into your life outside of the sport?
Discipline. One of the things what made the Patriots great for so many years is that they were disciplined. Penalties, no stupid stuff. They were going to, they were going to make you pay for you making mistakes. Right. And they were just a disciplined football team. They wasn't jumping off sides. They no unnecessary pass interference calls. They got on and off the field. You never had 10 men on the field or 12 men on the field. They were always just disciplined, and they capitalized off your mistakes. And those was what great teams do. And I'll tell you a funny story. So I used to always, especially being an entrepreneur, obviously I played NFL and I've been an athlete my entire life. But I used to hate going to big business meetings, right? You're sitting to a boardroom or whatever, you're pitching an idea, you're talking whatever partnership or whatever it may be. And someone always brought up a football quote, right? Or tried to relate something to what we were talking about, to football. And it used to piss me off. And I'm like, man, I understand we speak the same lingo. You don't have to break it down to me in football terms in order for me to understand it. And I used to really, under my breath, I used to get really pissed, right? And then I started to sit back and look, and I was like, wow. Football was the closest thing to life. Football was the closest thing to business. Think about this. I mean, you always have somebody behind you trying to take your position and job. Same thing in life. Somebody wants your position and job. You got obstacles. You get injured in football. You get hurt. You got to find a way to bounce back and come through adversity. In life, bad things happen all the time to good people, and you got to figure out a way to bounce back and get through adversity. You're building a team, building and leading a team. That's what I did every game before we started. I broke down the huddle and I got everybody ready to go. What you doing here in real life? You're building your team, your assistants, your secretaries, your presidents, your VPs, your executives, whoever. You're building a team. And I started to think, man, before you know it, I was using those same football references in some of the stuff that I was saying. And I'm like, damn, this thing is full circle. But football has been for me, it's even hard to put in words, because it's done so much in my life. And I'm not just saying what I've done on the field. I mean, the mentality that I've been able to take in order to, okay, this is what it took for me to be exceptional here. This is what I have to do to be exceptional here. If you have that mentality to learn, sit down and be motivated again, you can win in a lot of stuff.
That's awesome. And I know we're starting to come up against it. So I just want to ask you two last questions. One basically just about adversity. My understanding is that when you were younger, I mean, you had homes that you had lived in that had fires in them. I believe at one point you had told the media that you had not spoken with your father for a while.
Yeah.
When you have things in your life that are just adversity, and I'm sure there's many other things like the injuries, all the stuff that we deal with, how much of that do you attribute to you getting the level of success that you have in life? Did you need those things to overcome?
Well, you always say you'd rather those things not happen, right? I mean, sure. Nobody wants to, lose your home to a fire. Nobody wants to go and stay in a shelter or a rundown motel somewhere. Nobody, you don't want those things to happen. But in the midst of all these things happening, and while you think you're going through the worst things in life, and you always try to ask God or ask yourself, or ask anybody, why me? Why is this happening to me? What did I do? You know, and what happens throughout that process is you're gaining a thicker and another layer of skin that most people aren't able to have because they haven't seen that type of adversity. And what happens is, especially out here in the world, I mean, it's, you know, it can get pretty cutthroat. You know, people will gun for you, especially when you're in a high ranking position or you're a big CEO at a job or you got a lot of pressure. So that kind of ingrained something in me as a kid by going through that. And through my teenage years, by going through that, because I seen more than a 30 or 40 year old would have been. And I was 16. You know, I had to find a way to work at 13 years old and cut lawns and wash cars, rake leaves, shovel snow just so I can help my mom pay rent. And so when you do that, when you go through that stuff, it adds a layer of skin that most people don't have. And so I wish that I didn't have to deal with that, I'm also thankful at the same time that I did, because it set me up for a lot of success. I mean, it's hard doing what I do, and it's hard building. It's hard being an entrepreneur. It's hard walking into meetings and people not understanding your ideas, walking in somewhere else and tell you, hey, man, this is, you know, a BS plan. I don't want to go with it. So you got to go figure it out. Don't get, you know, kind of, you know, soft about it and just go back, figure it out, draw up another game plan and get going again.
Hell yeah. So Sean, to wrap this up, the most important question I can ask you, just to wrap everything up that we've talked about now, is what's the one best piece of advice that you'd like to leave this on, thinking of, you know, 17, 18 year old kid that just says, hey man, how do I get there?
Well, I would tell anybody this, enjoy the process. Enjoy the process, fall in love with the process, not the results. Because if you fall in love with the process and you loving what you do, and even I'm about to go work out when I get up here. I'm tired. I've been up since 5:45. I've had 19 calls already and, you know, 2 in-person meetings. I'm tired. I don't feel like working out, but enjoy it. Enjoy these days. Enjoy these 10, 11, 12, 13 hour days to have along. Enjoy it. And then if you enjoy what you're doing right now, the results, no matter what the result going to be, you're fine with, because you're already enjoying the process. You enjoy building. You enjoy creating. You enjoy putting things together, and not enjoy the car, not enjoy the house, not enjoy the money. If you enjoy what you're doing right now, you can do it forever. So I would say to anybody, anybody out there, enjoy the process, what you're doing, wherever it is. And then you know, if you enjoy the process and you're putting the time and work in, the result's going to be beautiful.
There it is. Sean Merriman, Mr. Lights Out. We got the Lights Out brand. It's Lights Out XF for extreme fighting. That's lightsoutxf.com for anyone that wants to go check it out. Of course, there's the Lights Out pod. The one thing that was off brand is Lights On for the foundation. And yeah, I think we can appreciate the Lights On for the foundation. But Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to break this down.
You got it, my man. Thanks for having me.